the whole world is watching as China responds to this disaster. And humanitarian agencies around the world are paying attention and also lending a hand. Nan Bizard, who's the Director of International Response and Programs at the International Red Cross, joins us from Washington, D.C. Nan, what is the Red Cross's role in China at this point? And broadly speaking, you know, there is a region that's lit up by disasters, if you include Myanmar.
Yeah, it's been a pretty wild couple of weeks for international disaster responders. The Red Cross and Red Crescent have national societies in 186 countries, and the Chinese Red Cross Society is certainly a very large one and a very strong one. They have accessed already the epicenter of the quake and are providing relief supplies and medical teams. As your correspondent just said, the access is very, very difficult, very challenging. Roads are blocked. There's a lot of strong aftershakes, afterquakes, which are really disrupting travel and certainly leading to terrified people. And you also now have rainy conditions, which certainly is interfering with the helicopter approach that the government had tried to bring in, which was they were planning to actually drop relief supplies and relief teams in by helicopter because some of the remote villages are so difficult to access.
Nan, there's no shortage of heavy equipment in China, as it's you know, certainly a major industrial country now, and also in that particular region has been booming. Chengdu is a very big city. Nevertheless, what are the obstacles, even given the fact that you know, China does have at least some of the tools at its disposal? Are we talking about people, qualified medical personnel? Is it purely geography that's the difficulty at this point?
Well, I don't think you're going to see a huge international response in terms of people. China, certainly the army, the government, and certainly the Red Cross Society of China have very qualified disaster responders. One of the big challenges in an earthquake is that the response, really, your window is very limited, 24, 48 hours to get people out of collapsed buildings. It's done by people, right? I mean, it's done by neighbors and family members and school teachers and local officials. And that's really the challenge, is that by the time you get in the big, heavy equipment, it's really almost too late. So a lot of that response is going to happen locally. I don't think there's going to be a big need for international staff, but no question there's going to be a pretty significant response financially, certainly by the Red Cross, Red Crescent movement, to purchase tents, tarps, bottled water, and support the health teams that will be coming in as part of the Red Cross Society of China.
Quickly, in a place like China, which is, you know, prides itself on its self-reliance in situations like this, and has also been, you know, relatively closed to the world over the last two generations, does the symbol of the Red Cross inspire confidence in the Chinese people, do you think?
I certainly believe that's true, and I hope that's true. The symbol of the Red Cross or the Red Crescent does mean impartial and independent humanitarian aid that should be first on the scene. And you'll see that. You saw that in Myanmar. You see it in the Chinese quake. In any of the photographs, you see that Red Cross symbol. It's something that we're deeply proud of and work very hard to continue to make that a quality response. I think the big thing here, though, is, as I said, the speed with collapsed buildings, the number of aftershocks and the strength of those aftershocks are going to further compromise the response effort, and that's of concern to everyone.
Well, Nan Bizard, thank you very much for joining us. Nan Bizard is coordinating efforts of the Red Cross from Washington, D.C. And, you know, a lot's going to be decided in the next 48 hours. Who lives, who dies, what buildings are vulnerable, whether it's new construction or old construction, what is the role of the government?
It's no question. And we were both covered horrific disasters like this, and it just evolves hour by hour. But I do have to say, I've seen those Red Cross folks out there. I've seen some of these advocacy groups and nonprofits in the midst of terrible disasters, and boy, they work hard.
And we should express our admiration for our colleagues at NPR who found themselves in the middle of the epicenter of that quake yesterday and have had some of the most extraordinary audio and coverage of this event. Melissa Block and Robert Siegel have done an extraordinary job, and certainly public radio stations have had great access to this story. But keep our responses in on the takeaway today. Our question is, endangered species list. Do you have a personal endangered species?
I just have to get this in here. Allison writes to us and she says, endangered species surfaces without advertising on them. There was a time when ads knew their place, she says, on billboards and the pages of newspapers and magazines. Now they're everywhere in elevators and
cabs. She wants to endanger them.
She wants to endanger them. It's just a very clever response. Thank you, Allison.
What you want endangered, what you think is endangered in this century, besides polar bears, 877-8-MY-TAKE.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information at knightfoundation.org. And by the Rockefeller Foundation and its American Worker Initiative. More at rockfound.org. This is The Takeaway.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.